What do you think? Satisfaction guaranteed.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 1, Episode 4, For Love or Money. And now, here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Man, these episode titles are lazy. Holy shit. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
Before we get into the episode, we do have some site business. First, it was announced last week, as you're hearing this, that the Beverly Hills 90210 reboot has a premiere date, which will be Wednesday, August 7th. I really hope that we get screeners, because not knowing that that was the premiere date, I am flying to Canada that day. So, I mean, obviously we will cope whether or not we get screeners. But yes, so just a reminder, when that happens, we will be suspending our coverage of both Melrose Place and old 90210 if it's still happening by then. I think it will be. And
Sigh.
Covering
yes, I think so.
The remake instead. So yeah, mark your calendars. Very exciting. Sarah, what were your, did you have thoughts on the cast photo that we tweeted from our Twitter account, AWT90210?
I continue to think that Shando looks great and is making all the right choices. And I believe you had some theories about the number of lifts in each shoe of Jason Priestley. Would you like to share those with the class?
Yeah, Jason Priestley is right in the center of this this photo, and I guess now I should put it in the visual aids. But he looks very Luke Perry-ish. Like, I think he consciously is trying to look like him. Not that they, I mean, they always had kind of similar hair and stuff too. Like, they were always styled to look alike, I think. But I think he's really leading into it. And yeah, he is not as tall as this photo suggests. Like, even flanked by two short actors, they are on high heels, so I don't buy it.
Yeah, I don't either, especially since it does look like Brian Austin Green was like Photoshop-ably shrunk down to like 91% to make Priestley look less teensy.
Yeah, there's some Lord of the Rings force perspective cinema magic going on with this photo, perhaps. Anyway, so there's that. August 7th. Mark your calendars, as I said. And we have set up a Patreon. Dave, do you want to speak about that a little bit?
Sure. If you go to our website, againwiththispodcast.com, there is a link up top to get you to the Patreon page. If you're not familiar with Patreon, basically, it's a way to support things that don't really have like a crazy great money flow opportunity, which, you know, podcasts, unless you're Mark Maron and stuff, you know, they just kind of fun to do, but not exactly a way to make a living. So you can support the podcast to the tune of like $2 a month or, you know, whatever you want. You can use one of the tiers out of there. You can enter your own amount. If you enjoy the podcast, it would be a great way to keep it running. One of the things that Patreon does is you sort of set up goals, and every time you hit a goal, you as a creator try to do something on Extra Hot Great, where we set this up as well. For every X dollars that we earn a month, we do like a bonus episode, kind of like, you know, a 10, 15 minute episode on something tangential to, you know, the subject matter. So who knows what that would be for this? That's up to Tara and Sarah and probably our patrons too.
Yes.
But, you know, a kind of like, if you remember the Again With This minis, sort of in that area, we are playing around with the amount of that goal. We have weird statistics and we're trying to figure out, you know, what that number is. So that number may change depending on how we see things going. So like it might go down a little bit. It won't go up. So if you enjoy this podcast and you would like to support us a little bit each month, we would certainly welcome it. It would help us. We actually have to buy some new equipment and stuff soon. So it would help us do that in the immediate. And anything to add, guys?
No, thank you for everyone who's listening. We should say the podcast will always be free. This isn't like some kind of switcheroo. This is just for bonus. This isn't the first stage on the podcast going behind a paywall. This is just for you to get extra stuff. And if that's something that you want, you can kick in a little via Patreon.
Right. And the other bit of site business, and this is not on the script, but I just remembered, I keep on forgetting to talk about it, which is we have gotten emails and tweets about like where to discuss the episodes now. Now that previously TV forums are part of Primetimer, and Primetimer has editorial that we're not putting the podcasts into, that means the forum topics aren't getting created. And then it's just sort of a barrier. And I think those areas are sort of dried up. So people are asking, like, where do I go now? I mean, you could go there in theory, but what we were thinking is we can turn on comments on the actual site on, again, with this podcast.com. And it would be like a discus setup like you've seen all over the web. But we would like it if we can get some volunteers to just sort of like keep an eye on it for killing spam and like racist people that happen to come by and stuff like that. Not really for the content beyond just like egregious, you know, examples like that. We're not looking for correcting spelling mistakes and all that. Just sort of like a high level policing of ne'er-do-wells. If that is something that you feel like you might be able to do for us, I will speak personally. I do not engage in comments anymore. For my mental health, I neither seek out good or bad comments as a matter of principle. So if we all want a place to talk about the episodes and things around the episodes, we will turn the policing over to the users. So if that is of interest to you, do you think you can help? And I think we'll have a few people, depending on how many volunteers we get, we'll sort of give you admin status or however it works in Discus, and just, you know, casually check in once in a while, you know, as you're doing your rounds, and, you know, hopefully that'll work. And if we can get a couple people like that, then we will turn on the comments ASAP.
And how do they get in touch if they want to?
Send an email to hello@againwiththispodcast.com, or I suppose on Twitter too.
And I should say, we don't anticipate people like kicking off in the comments. People on the previously.tv threads were always like very respectful and well-behaved. So I don't think this is something that's going to, you know, tax anyone's spirit too much.
Yeah, it's like once a day, make sure nobody's like trying to
sell you sunglasses.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's basically it. All right. Shall we get to the episode?
Sure. It's very boring, so we can continue talking about admin stuff if you guys want.
No? Well, let's start so we can finish with the C-plot. Gay Matt and Rhonda get a garbage plot line of their very own. Rhonda is mildly bitching about her utilities bill when Gay Matt snaps at her that they, not clear who they are, the powers that be, cut more funding from the halfway house where he works and he lost his cook. He has a pool of potential volunteers, but it's hard to pull people away from paying jobs. Rhonda offers to help him out the next night. He tries to put her off politely, but when she insists and he makes sure she means it, and she is sure she does, he says he'll stop asking around. So guess what happens? It's very unsurprising when Rhonda shows up at the halfway house at lunchtime. By the way, when you go to the visual aids, you are going to see an array of excellent Rhonda athleisure looks. Really, in every single scene, she looks amazing. Sarah, would you agree?
I absolutely would agree. I cut many of those photos. She's often the only bearable thing to look at in the entire like frame, especially since Matt is dressing in like David Silver cast-offs that have been washed too many times. Like nothing he's wearing has a shape.
No.
It's really he's such a good-looking kid, too.
He really is. It's strange how well the Rhonda looks have aged too, considering that they are also very 90s, but in their simplicity and yet their like over the topness somehow they speak to me.
Same.
So Matt is relieved to see her, but she is of course there to say she forgot she agreed to teach someone else's class that night, so she isn't going to be able to help him with dinner after all, and she has to teach her own class in 10 minutes, so she can't even stay and help him with prep. He tries not to lose it, but tells her he bought all the ingredients for her to make chicken curry. She says she brought the recipe, but he does not even take it. She doesn't know what to say, but Gay Matt suggests she just say what she always does. Next time, Matt, I promise. Which, ouch, but also fair. I mean, this is rough.
Yeah.
When you have polite fought over something, you can't back out. That's the rules. Sorry.
That has the force of law. I'm here to tell you.
It really does. So the next day, Rhonda and her latest amazing look try to get Gay Matt's attention, but he tries to ignore her swimming away in the pool. She presses him to forgive her, but he does not back down, saying that she agreed to help him and then flaked and let him down and that it's not the first time. But then he goes too far, basically saying that her job is pointless bullshit and that the reason he doesn't know what she does is that he works 100 hours a week. She notes that it's not healthy for him to put his job ahead of his own life. But then she goes too far and claims she let him down because she's a people pleaser, which is like the job interview technique of what are your faults? Oh, I'm a perfectionist. Like, I overcommit because I'm a people pleaser. And no. That's not an excuse you could use. So bad show all around. Later, after a dumb exchange with Allison about work-life balance, and we will get to her, Gay Matt actually finds time in his busy schedule to go and take Rhonda's cardio funk class. I wish the whole show was set in this class. I love it so much.
My God. It's like, it's really amazing.
Go ahead.
Well, everything that's happening is like visually unacceptable and therefore delightful. It's hard to explain.
Yeah. Also, I'm not a class guy in terms of fitness, but this one looks really fun, and it's making me think maybe I have been wrong about Zumba and I should give it a shot because everyone looks like they're having an amazing time. Of course, they are all out of work LA dancers and thus are making it look easy, but still. I want to also give a special mention for Matt's How to Buy Stock for the 90s t-shirt, which I cut for the visual aids because it's, you know, as it suggests, very of its time. Anyway, he's there to say he was wrong and has been totally self-absorbed. He doesn't want to lose his best friend, and they hug, and then we find out that you can't audit Rhonda's class. Clip two.
Hey, you guys, we got a new jack here. All let's bust a move.
It's very cute.
Yeah.
Rhonda's students are very encouraging to Gay Matt in helping him integrate, and Doug Savant has never looked straighter than when he tries to do exercisey dance moves. I'm sorry to be stereotypical, but it's true.
Yeah, it's Brandon-esque, and it's desperation, but it's cute.
Later, Gay Matt is getting the residents at the halfway house to help get a dinner together when Rhonda, Sandy, and Allison roll in with groceries, singing I'll Be There to him. Everyone's looks in this scene, except Allison's, who just looks dumb and boring and chambray, but Rhonda and Sandy both look great. And there's a picture of them in the visual aids as well. Did you want a special mention to her vest?
No, you can see them in the visual aids, and you should, for once. Yeah. They're great.
On to the B plot. Jake gets involved in an art fraud scheme, ? So Jake is rudely working on his motorcycle in the middle of the courtyard. Like, what is with this whole franchise and people not knowing how to do two-wheeled vehicle maintenance appropriately? I would really like to know.
Oh, really? Why are you wearing a white t-shirt? Why aren't you wearing any shoes? Mm-hmm. Why aren't you wearing any pants? Why is this happening next to the pool?
Yeah. Not okay. Jane and Michael get back from jogging, tiresomely bantering. I have in my outfit in my notes, their outfits are chef's kiss. And then when I opened your visual aids, the first one is the two of them in their 90s gear, which is not aged as well as Rhonda's.
No, au coton, like all of it, and huge, just huge and flappy and a lot of necklines cut out. It's not great. And is he also running in like belted jersey shorts?
Yeah, you're young. Like, this isn't like when I see old guys at the gym with their trainers and they're working out in like their jeans. Like, they're like rubber soled lace up dress shoes, like, which I have seen many times. Yeah, it's weird. Also, he's in a Cat in the Hat shirt, which is very of that era too. I remember.
Oh God, it really is. Yeah.
The Dr. Seuss shirts. I had them.
Yep. Me too. And the hat. Boo, oh, Sarah.
Boo. Oh, the hat. Oh, man. That's another level, though. I'm sorry.
Yeah, don't be. You're not as sorry as I am. / was.
So Michael takes a break from goofing around with Jane to tell Jake he's going to get oil spots on the pool deck, and he is correct. Jane wisely takes off before this turns into a pissing contest, and Michael starts to follow, but tells Jake on his way to move his bike to the garage, also to drop off his rent check since Mr. K, the building owner, called. And Jake is a bitch about it in clip three.
Why don't you tell Mr. K to call me personally?
And look, man, I just don't want to see you get evicted.
I've been busting my ass to find something. It's dead in construction.
Okay, I know it's tough.
Don't worry about it. I'm going to find something by the end of the day.
All right.
Job hunting sexily.
It's really really not cool. So, but Jake does try to make good on his pledge by walking around with his resume looking for work. We join him as he's trying his luck at a cafe, but the manager is the violinist guy from that one Northern Exposure with the Guarnieri, and Maurice is trying to buy it, to collect it, and he needs someone to play it, blah, blah, blah. Northern Exposure, please come to streaming. Anyway, as you will recall, that actor is British and therefore snooty, as we hear in clip four.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm not looking for. Someone who's got a second career. An actor, a writer, or a model.
Hey, hey, don't worry about it. Yeah, work with my hands.
Yes, well, hopefully you wash them sometimes.
Just tell me if there's a job, okay?
Well, you do have the right look.
Yeah, you do.
Mm-hmm. And he also... I love that this scene is also, he says that he saw their Help Wanted ad, the past. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it is absolutely a Delicious Cumin 2 electric cumaloo situation. Good luck, Jake.
Yeah, it's a little more casual. It's not as like sceney, but it's also lunchtime, so it's hard to say. But yeah, Mr. Manager eyes Jake down as any of us would, and then walks him over to the espresso machine to give him a very cursory lesson in how to use it. My understanding is that those are complicated, but sure, take 3 seconds to do it. Why not? And when we see Jake next, he's apparently fucking up steaming milk. Mr. Manager has more notes, and rather than punch his way out of this problem, Jake just says he's overdue for a break. Mr. Manager commits a Department of Labor violation and refuses, saying they're too busy. And he leaves Jake with a bunch of frou-frou drink orders, and Jake snits about whatever happened to plain old coffee. So the next time you hear someone make this joke in your life, please tell them it was played out 30 years ago. Thanks in advance. Then some broad named Perry comes in, having recognized Jake's bike out front, and she is not subtle. Clip five.
I love the way you bury that nozzle. You always did have the touch.
Okay.
I don't get it.
Yeah, she is the early 90s, like, personified, walking around. Every single one of her outfits, which you can also see in the visual aids, are wow.
Yeah, she also looks like... the lady from Superman 2, the henchwoman from Superman 2.
Oh, yeah, yeah, she does.
And mm-hmm. Winona Ryder had a kid. That henchwoman actor's name is Sarah Douglas. Hey.
Hey. So Mr. Manager scolds Jake for running behind, and Jake leaves for his coffee break. And outside, Perry reminisces in clip six.
Remember when we rode out into the desert and made love in the middle of the road on this bike?
Shaq's held up pretty good.
Just get off the bike. That's way too difficult.
Who would even try?
do you know what's going to happen if it tips over? Like, those things are heavy.
Yeah.
Find some grass.
Yeah, seriously. This is a nonsense phrase, and I can't believe neither of them was like, wait, physically, how would this possibly work? But whatever. She was at the shop picking up lunch in her capacity as an art dealer. Jake scoffs that she doesn't know anything about art, but she says that in LA, all you need is the right look, and she has something going that could make them both money. Claiming it's legit, he's not so sure. She writes her number on his arm just before Mr. Manager comes out to bark that Jake's break is over, and so is his job if he pulls that shit again. So the next day, Perry shows up to knock on Jake's door. You can also see this in the visual aids. This knockoff, like, pastel Versace blouse situation is the busiest thing in the world, but again, the 90s visual aids. Let us hear clip seven.
Can I help you? I doubt it.
I mean, she's not wrong, but also
sell them wrong and right again. Well.
Both of you are fighting over Jake. Like, be realistic. This is not going to end well for anyone. When Sandy says that Jake is out and won't be back for a while, Perry leaves her name and Sandy calls her a bitch, which, fine. Meanwhile, Jake is being bad at his job and acting like it's beneath him, as we all want people to do whom we work with or employ. And Mr. Manager is like, it's not unreasonable to give people what they ordered. And Jake quits on the spot and then goes outside to a payphone. Hashtag again, the past. And then I think he tries to read the number on his bicep. Did you not shower? Did she write it and she walks around with like a laundry pen? What is happening? So Jake ends up at Perry's gallery of dumb art. Said dumb art, you can see in the visual aids, of course. In their former life together, he was a security guard and she was a sales girl at a department store, and they boosted some perfume together. She has made a fortune selling paintings like the ones on the walls and opens the door to a back room as she says she can pass off anyone as a hot young talent. And to demonstrate, she chucks some paint at a canvas and explains that she needs Jake to pose as the hot new artist. So it's basically a JT Leroy situation years ahead of the fact. They will not be breaking the law, she says, and she thinks it's flirty to take non-dried up paint in an open can and pour it all over Jake, and then he acts pissed, but then takes another can and pours it on her, and they crack up and it starts smearing on each other. It's very early Kelly and Colin, with all that that implies.
At least it's not brown paint this time.
Thank you. It is not. That is a lesson they unlearned in the time between this episode and that one. Take a whiff. Okay. At her art party full of assholes, Perry scolds Jake, standing against the wall talking to no one, for not wearing the jacket she had picked out for him, but he doesn't like being told what to do. We fucking get it. He's a renegade. Calm down, show. My God. Enter Bill, Perry's bare-chested client. Perry has told Bill that Jake is a real find, and then Perry unveils the painting, which is a bunch of splatters and literal butt prints that you can see in the visual aids. Like... It's how it's not more smeared, I don't know. Like,
yeah,
these are perfect.
I was wondering that also. And why aren't there any? Well, you know what? Who cares?
But there should
be, you know, tackle prints also, in my opinion. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. Bill claims it reminds him of a Francis, and if he means bacon, no. Jake sneers that it reminds him of a Hanson, and Perry coos to Bill that he's been edgy since he got out of jail. Bill wants to know what Jake was thinking about when he painted it, and Jake truthfully says, sex, death, and rock and roll. Bill likes him! Grift success!
God.
Later, Jake finds Perry in the back doing coke and is scandalized and mad. No, this is like the most predictable thing that could have possibly happened. Come on.
Yeah, really.
He knew that she did coke, but for some reason thought she had stopped, which they never discussed, but okay. She promises he's going to get paid with more to come, but when she proffers the tray, he smacks it onto the floor. And on his way up, Bill stops him to ask if they have a deal, and Jake bellows, surprise, I'm a fake! Bill thinks he just has imposter syndrome. Jake tells him the whole scam, gives him a painting. There's also, in the middle of this, opens the door, and there's like two weirdos all in white. Sarah has clipped this moment with another Maletting ruined, and it's true. That is what they look like. It's like some kind of cult-adjacent nonsense.
Oh, yeah, it looks like Wild Wild Country extras. Uh-huh. Like, it's something is very wrong. I don't understand this party.
No.
I never want to go to it, and no. I don't have to, and I'm glad.
Yes. And Perry chases after Jake, demanding to know where he's going. Answer, as far away from his life as possible. I assume that means we'll never see her again. Unfortunately, Jake's imagination is very small, because as far away from his life as possible is shooters. Sandy starts to needle him in her usual way, and in his usual way, he tells her to leave him alone. She mentions his having been gone lately, and he vaguely says his past came back to haunt him. They agree that it would be good to throw out all the bad memories and records and debt and parents, and as a would-be actor, Sandy tries to reinvent herself every day out of a similar impulse. Jake announces that he's selling his bike. She doesn't believe it, but he needs the money. And Jake then follows through, bringing it to a shop to try to sell it. Like, owner likes it, but he's overstocked as it is. And Jake is about to leave, but then the guy asks if he could work there as a mechanic. Jake has a job. Hooray. I'm glad we're done with Jake the hard luck story, because that was boring.
I don't think we've seen the last of it, but at least this iteration is over. Perry sucks. Next.
On to the A plot. Allison's new man is trying to steal her amazing ad ideas. Okay, outfit. Let's start there. She's in like navy, slightly shiny in some lights pants, which of course are pleated, obviously. And then she's got like a white t-shirt and a beige and wine real ugly vest. None of it goes. It's hideous. It's not okay. I'm mad about it. It's definitely
not okay if you're working the front desk at an ad agency. No.
Yeah, I don't know what job that would be appropriate for. Maybe she should go work at the center, because she looks like a social worker. No offense to social workers.
She does.
She's still a receptionist, but also a would-be Tess McGill, as we hear when she answers the phone, clip 8.
Hello, Mr. Danworth. I'm sorry, Miss Cabot won't be until 10. By the way, congratulations on that stock split. I read about it in the Wall Street Journal, page 3.
This is supposed to impress us with like how much initiative she has, but this is straight out of Working Girl. Also, it's just reading the paper.
Yeah.
So she's about to reach for something when Zach Galligan, a.k.a. the kid from Gremlins, except here the mailroom guy named Rick, drops an inter-office envelope on her hand and says he heard her call. Her reward is a donut. Apparently, he has been plying her with breakfast carbs for days, which, honestly, not the worst play.
Right.
She wanly flirts and he lets it be known that he has a crush on her. So at lunch, he flirts some more badly in clip 9.
You can tell a lot about people from the way they pack their lunches.
Like what?
Well, the perfect but generous use of peanut butter means that you love it and that you're benignly compulsive and unnecessarily diet conscious.
I figured after all the high carb with snacks you've been giving me, I feel light on lunch. Lucy Cabot, VP Sunray Sunscreen. God, she's so confident. Wonder if that'll be me in 10 years.
Major chocoholic. You can soften her with Hershey bars.
What are you, the mailroom snoo?
Okay, bye now. Hey, Rick.
Hey.
She knows you?
How can he tell how her sandwich was made? Like, did she open it up? Like, that's just weird.
Oh, it was like celery sticks.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Yeah. Also, who packs that for lunch?
Yeah, gross.
Although I will say that if she is like me and is like, ants on a log would be great if not for the ants, and just made logs for lunch, that's something to enjoy about Allison. But we'll hear about this again at the end of the episode, I'm sure.
So when she says she knows you, Rick tries not to get into it, but takes little prompting to admit that he's the son of Joe Danworth of the agency's sunscreen account. He claims it's a drag having such a famous name, to which Allison counters that it beats having zero connections like she does. But Rick feels like he has to work twice as hard to prove himself. Without a segue, he asks her for dinner, and when she balks, he teases that her alternative is to go home and watch a video, as if that's bad. But she's wary yet flirty about starting an office romance and doesn't say no. And later, Sandy brings over Rhonda's dress to lend Allison for her date, with Rhonda in tow. Allison likes it but isn't sure it's her, and Sandy has barely started trying to talk her into it when a pointlessly shirtless Billy wanders in to shade her in clip 10.
Oh my god, it dates.
How is that going for you, Billy? Shut up.
Also, did you want to talk about her robe, which she is still in at this point?
Oh, boy. Yeah, it's the like slightly darker blue moon version of Kelly's white and pink star robe. So apparently this bathrobe company has naked pictures of someone in the Spelling family, because these bathrobes are not okay. No. And don't use it twice. It's like a character beat. It's not okay.
So there's dumb banter about war paint and the battle of the sexes and how Rick is covering up his family connections. Billy advises Allison not to let Rick know how interested she is, to keep talking business and let him make moves. And then there's a knock at the door and Billy smugly and shirtlessly opens it because Allison is too slow and too still in her robe to stop him. And Zach Galligan's, oh shit, she lives with this torso face, is actually pretty funny. I made a gif. Like, he eyes him down and his face falls. It's kind of funny. There's a dumb exchange reestablishing for the audience that might be new to the show that Allison and Billy are platonic roommates, and Billy is not charming enough to sell this as a real attempt to undermine Rick, who cannot stop staring at Billy's chest, as none of us can. And in her room, Allison is horrified that Billy's acting like her dad. Sandy thinks it's sweet because Sandy is an idiot. At the restaurant, a busker plays sax, and Rick claims he used to want to be a musician, but that his father thought he should go into advertising. And he asks Allison how she got into it, and we hear that in clip 11.
Well, I wanted to do something creative. My dad was in sales, and I used to dream of ad line for his products. They just come to me in the middle of the night. I even thought of one for your dad. God, I am rambling.
No, tell me your idea.
Okay. Sunscreen is 90s, right? It helps people. It has an ecological twist, but it's sensual. So I was thinking of a sexy campaign, like, it's hotter than a burn.
It's really good. My dad should hear this.
I don't know. Really?
No.
I don't know. really? Shut up.
And so, she's also like, oh, God, I'm rambling. He's like, no, let's hear it. And she immediately spits it out like, all right, Allison.
Yeah. But a woman with no confidence, like, wow, how novel. What an interesting character beat.
And yet, I hate to say it, but ecological twist? What?
It doesn't. It is 90s, though. I have to say that part is true.
Yeah.
Rick walks Allison home and they kiss, and Billy actually is waiting up for her and watches through the blinds with a dopier face than the usual, which you can see in the visual aids. When Allison gets to work the next day, the inter-office envelope on her desk contains a rose. Allison tries to kiss up to Miss Cabot, but she is not interested and only barely civil. After the meeting Lucy Cabot was racing to, she lets Rick continue selling her while Allison eavesdrops in clip 12.
How did you come up with this?
I figure sunscreen is 90s, right? It helps people, it has an ecological twist, but it's sensual.
I love it. It's hotter than a burn. It's sexy. It hits our young adults.
Wow. He, like, word for word, ripped off her whole pitch. That's bold.
And just mispronounced a different word. Sensual. Did Mozart clue you in on that?
Allison must speak at this and waylays Rick to confront him about stealing her concept. He tries to dodge her by going into the men's room, but she goes straight in after him. And finally, this is his defense. Clip 13.
Hey, I had an idea like that last week. Don't you know? Everyone listens to the same shock jocks. Everyone watches the same MTV spots. We all get ideas from the same places.
Yeah? So why wait till the day to pitch it?
Well, maybe you just reminded me of it. Big deal.
It is a huge deal. Don't walk away from me, you thief. Why didn't you tell me last night?
I didn't want to steal your moment.
Sure you did. You used me. God. So naive.
I'm not clear on this timeline. Like, did he know that she had these ambitions? Like, I think he actually did like her and then just lucked into this as something he thought he could get away with stealing.
Probably. I mean, also, if you're that unconfident, way to assume that somebody was working you, the, you know, assistant coordinator for your super ideas that no one else cared about or asked you about. Shut up.
Anyway, Allison is so naive that she goes straight into Miss Cabot's office to take credit for the idea. And Miss Cabot is all over the place in her response. Clip 14.
Allison, what do you want me to say? Rick didn't even mention your name. Miss Cabot, I'm not lying. Let's be honest. You gave him that idea so he could help you. No, I was making conversation, small talk. And he took advantage of you? Exactly. Listen, Allison. The work world doesn't always operate on the honor system. If I call Rick in about this, his father could be very offended, and you might end up being the punching bag. That is so unfair. Allison, you need to develop a tougher skin. Next time you have a great idea, my suggestion is that you keep it to yourself before you bring it to me.
I don't think there'll be a next time.
Sexily.
What is... This is like the worst mentoring of a younger employee I think I've ever heard. Like, her messaging is all over the map.
Yeah. Not to mention that if he gave Cabot this idea, that, like, then it's burned, basically. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, she sort of shouldn't use it anyway, never mind if it's disputed as to the source.
Right. Like, you need to develop a thicker skin. Okay, but at the same time, like, what are you going to do now that I have told this to you and you believe me? You know, I don't know. Anyway, Allison's great ideas lost like tears and rain. Also, the honor system. Thanks, Donna. Then stupid Allison immediately goes to the reception desk, gathers up like a mug and an elastic band ball or something, and stomps out like an idiot. And when we see her again, it's the next day and she's in bed eating ice cream with a wooden spoon, having just finished telling Billy the whole saga. She feels like she failed, which Billy says she did only by quitting. She doesn't know what she'll do if she goes back. And he says maybe she'll do something right. I don't know what that means, but she's going to listen to him. And next thing you know, she's dressed, putting her sad mug back on her desk. Enter Miss Cabot, who wasn't sure they would see her today. Allison snits that she had a rough night, but is determined to prove herself. Miss Cabot makes some noises about not wanting Allison to be disgruntled, but Allison proudly tells her not to worry about it. Miss Cabot wants to work something out, and when Allison says she does have other ideas, Miss Cabot excitedly says that Rick's dad is coming in tomorrow, so maybe Allison and Rick could collaborate and pitch ideas together.
Oh, thanks, Miss Cabot, for making me co-editor-in-chief of the paper.
Yep. Allison's face drops hilariously, which you can see in the visual aids, and Miss Cabot's response is very Catherine Parker, also of Working Girl, clip 15.
Take it from an old warrior. You're getting a break. Use it.
Maybe I will.
Maybe I will. Cool. Can't wait to see what you do, Grage.
So in Miss Cabot's office with her feet up on the desk, Allison watches footage. Stupid Rick shows up with dim sum and Allison tries to Julia sugar baker him in clip 16.
You know, Rick, you've done me a great service. You've shown me what 4 years of college didn't teach me. How to play the game and get ahead no matter what it takes.
Allison, it was a misunderstanding.
No, you should feel good. This sunscreen campaign has taught me to protect more than my skin. There's my back, my career. I'm a real player now.
Well, then let's play together.
With whose ideas? 3 days ago, I was a dreamer. I've grown up. So, what have you got?
What do you mean?
Ad lines, remember? Bright ideas we were supposed to be coming up with?
Ladies first.
You first. That's what I thought.
Well, I thought we'd work on them together.
Surprise me with your brilliance. I'll see you at the meeting tomorrow.
I'll be there.
And I'll be there. Early.
I mean, really? Really, music coordinator? It's so bad. It's so bad.
Yeah. Also, it's like they established earlier in the scene that it's after midnight. So what have they been doing this whole time, if not brainstorming? Like, I don't understand. Anyway, the next day, Allison runs into Gay Matt in the courtyard on her way to work, and they have this exchange in clip 17.
Hey, you look like you're off to do big things.
Trying? You're at it pretty early, too.
Well, now I am doing the work of five people.
You're driven. It's great. You love your work.
Love? I wouldn't say love. I'd say dedicated. Dedicated to the extent where I don't have a life anymore.
Who's got time? Seems like the minute you slow down, somebody runs you over.
Cheery outlook.
Hey, I don't make the rules. I just play by them. Take no prisoners.
You're ruthless, Allison.
Don't you have to be? I mean, aren't you sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I can be.
Because you know what you want, and you can't let anything or anyone stand in your way. You've got the right idea.
I've seen some conversations where someone was just waiting for their chance to talk, but, like, this is nothing he is saying has anything to do with what she's doing. And he is a social worker. Like, yeah. It's not a dog eat dog world for him.
No. Whatever.
It's dumb. Allison goes to work. Rick is already loafing like an idiot in Miss Cabot's office when she goes in. Introductions are made. Mr. Danworth is kind of reserved, saying he hopes Rick is treating Allison well, and she grins that she feels protected just being around Rick, which segues to her presentation and tiny storyboard in clip 18.
I show beautiful images of couples, moms and kids, fire people and citizens, a woman and a weightlifter, all applying sunray sunscreen, and I'd slogan it, I feel protected around you.
Unique approach. I like that. I like that.
So, why? It's stupid. Fire people and citizens. Okay, uh-huh. Data. Thanks
also
for coming in.
Also, a woman
today.
And a weightlifter, like, women can lift weights too, Allison. Come on. Mm-hmm. But I love this old guy playing Mr. Danforth, like leaning into his tiny role, because you kind of forget, like, these are character actors who are trying to work too and trying to figure out, how can I be relevant in this new world of shows about young people? I know. I'll put 5 million beats between my two. I like that.
Yep.
Anyway. Then it's Rick's turn. He looks like shit to match his concept, which we hear in clip 19.
It's a variation on the before and after approach, only it's with sunray sunscreen and without it. The woman on the left is in the final stages of skin cancer, advanced tumors. On the right, a safe, healthy sunray tan.
Anything else, son?
Oh, well, Dad,
Rick, what about your color yourself healthy, happy, and tan idea?
Oh, yeah.
He freeballed off the premise of a tan being seen as a mask of sadness. Oh, Rick, I'm sorry. I forgot to return your worksheets.
Thanks, Allison.
Let him fail. Oh, my
Seriously,
God.
Seriously. Like, I mean, the only time I understood what Miss Cabot was getting at was when she was like, I'm giving you a chance. Use it. And my understanding was your chance is to make him look like he has no idea what he's doing and that you do, instead of rescuing him and look like this
yeah,
is
like,
supposed
to let's
be-
all feel sorry for him because his dad is a hard driving whatever the fuck. Like, everybody has problems. White guy. Who fucking cares? Get your own lunch.
What he did nothing to redeem himself from stealing her idea. Like, he does not deserve this in any kind of a way.
No. And I'm assuming we never see him again. So it won't have any, like, there won't be any point in her having, like, thrown him a lifeline in order to climb up higher. Because no, she's being a doormat.
Well, let's see how things end for the doormat. After the meeting, Miss Cabot finds Allison to say she knows all of the good ideas were hers. Allison had Rick by the throat and bailed him out, and apparently he has thanked her with an oversized novelty Hershey kiss. Allison says she helped Rick for herself and supposes she took herself off the fast track. Miss Cabot thinks Allison is training for the marathon. This is all complete horseshit. I hate it.
Yeah.
All right. That's the end. Let us close up by naming our episode MVP. Matt is the only one who actually seems to be helping anyone at all in this episode, frankly.
I think that Rhonda provides a valuable service despite being paid for it and looked excellent doing it.
She really did. Least valuable player. Allison.
Jake.
Fair.
Like, if you're going to do butt print art, get the money.
Yeah.
And don't be throwing people's cocaine around. Come on. Grow up.
That is really rude. Let's do the SAMP 20181 challenge and list 5 ways Allison shows she's really an 80-year-old woman in a 20-something body. Sarah, it sounded like you had one.
Yeah. The vest, obviously. But, I mean, I assume I was talking about her just being like, like, just her tone in that one clip.
Oh,
she's
yeah.
like, okay. Yeah.
She definitely has retrograde ideas about men and women's place in a working environment in terms of who you boost and when to hide your light, I guess.
Mm. The ants on a log, sans ants, while I appreciate her skipping the raisins, is like a very... either 5-year-old or 85-year-old thing to pack as your lunch. Like, just put it on bread. That's what bread is for.
Yeah. Do we have 2 more? I don't know. She was trying to be more modern. I mean, she certainly told us about the 90s a lot.
Fire people. It's just very weird. And ecological. There are some very Amish pronunciations there. I guess that's not old, but...
Mm. Let's say it counts. This one was a bit of a stretch. That makes 5.
True. Next time on Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition, Matt drags out his suspension by not observing its terms, Kelly drags out her departure from the store, and Donna and David drag out the whole dating other people stuff before their inevitable reunion. You'll be, quote, reunited with your last meal when you get a load of our visual aids, which you can find for this and every other episode of Again With This at our website. That's againwiththispodcast.com. You can see selections from those visual aids by following us on Twitter at AWT90210. I am Prestige Butt Print Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Motorcycle Pureller Tara Ariano, and she is on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Old Warrior David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.